See, I'm looking out here at the upper orchard and growing area. I know down below us you have several acres of various colors of green and various textures. And it's about the middle of the growing season. I'm at Red Earth Farm with Larry Giles, and Larry and his wife Katie have been here for several years and have really developed quite a productive farm. Also got some fruit trees in front of me with foil in them to keep the birds out. Larry, what am I looking at right here?
Those are peppers and eggplants.
And beyond that?
Those would be tomatoes.
So often we hear a lot about sustainability and about organic farming. And I know that sustainability is very important to you. In your farming practices, how do you define sustainability, and what are the practices that create sustainable farming?
Well, this is my 25th year growing sustainably, organically, and no 2 years have been the same. One of the key components of being sustainable is being flexible each season. The difficulties and challenges will be different year to year. Some of them will be the same every year. So I think it's really being open and flexible to solutions to problems and taking advantages of the really good conditions that we have.
How does sustainability differ from more corporate farming? How do your practices differ from a larger, more corporate type farm?
Well, even the large corporate farms on some level can attain some sense of sustainability. We use a lot of manual cultivation. That's one of the things that often on large farms you'll see. It's a full mechanical. Hardly anyone gets their feet dirty, their knees dirty at all on the soil prep, on the planting, and even the harvesting. A lot of that's done mechanically. So what we're doing is we're mostly all hands-on cultivating, the planting, and the harvesting. And we're looking at not just looking at a field for that year's crop. We're looking at building the soil fertility, the soil structure for the next 10 years, so the next 20 years. So if my children want to grow in this field, it'll be fertile enough for them to grow. Or sometimes the large farms, they're really putting in input that'll be used this 1 year and make their money back on that fertilizer. It's almost a dormant soil that they're putting all the nutrients in that year's crop's going to use, and then start again fresh the following year. Well, we're trying to do it on a more holistic approach where we're growing cover crops, continually adding compost, and really trying to build the long-term fertility of the soil.
What are the cover crops?
It depends on the field. If we're really trying to build some fertility, we may grow some nitrogen-fixing legumes over the winter. During the summer months, just to keep this, if our soil is dormant, we may grow a buckwheat crop, not for the seeds or the grain, but actually just to keep the roots alive and the soil alive, and we'll turn that buckwheat back in just before planting in the fall. Sometimes we grow some wheat or some grasses, which will help smother out some weeds, or some clover, which both fixes nitrogen and breaks open this heavy clay soil here in the foothills. It allows those crop roots to mine down and get to those minerals and nutrients.
And what about water? We're right next to the ditch here. The ditch is running behind us. I assume you have a well, maybe more than one. Is water availability a problem? And how do you manage water on your crops?
Water in the West is a huge issue. But with our farm being so small, we are able to sustain by using drip irrigation, which cuts our water usage way, way down. We have a well that we use. We have a stellar well here for Tuolumne County. And we also have the historic Elgerine Ditch, which runs right through the middle of the farm. And we'll use both sources of water all summer long. The ditch just runs for 6 months from the middle of May to the middle of October. And we'll often use that for flood irrigating the orchard, for keeping our stock animals alive, our goats, pigs, chickens. And we'll use our well for some of the food crops where it's a little bit cleaner.
What about pest control? On a sustainable farm, do you manage pests?
We found the best way to manage pests is just not to let them get out of control. We always have pests. One example would be the tomato hornworm. 2 years ago, the conditions were ripe, and my 8-year-old and 5-year-old plucked off about 2,000 hornworms off a couple thousand tomato plants. This year, we had absolutely zero hornworms. The conditions have been just right. We've had grasshopper outbreaks. The conditions have been just right with the humidity and the heat, where we've had aphid outbreaks taking out complete crops. So we're always just keeping our eyes open of the conditions that we have and just trying to make it so it's not quite comfortable for those bad pests. And we're always trying to encourage good insects.
So you avoid any kind of spraying, and you're looking at more biological approaches to pest control?
Yeah, both biological and mechanical. Often some of the best way to control the bugs is actually out there with your hands and pulling bugs off. We're small enough that in a few hours we can go through a couple thousand squash plants and pull off squash bugs and dispose of them that way, rather than spraying them with a pesticide. It's definitely a challenge. At the same time, we're diverse enough that if one crop succumbs to a infestation of a specific pest, we have 7, 8, 10 other crops that may flourish that they're not attracted to. So being diverse, I think, really helps with the pest.
Sustainability also means, because if you're not economically viable, you're not sustainable. So that diversity also helps you economically survive when one crop may not be very productive one year, something else may take its place and help you economically.
The temptation is always there to have more of a monocrop farm, especially when you have a bumper crop of something. The question is, why aren't we just growing that every year? Because if we just grew that one crop and that crop succumbed to a pest or the conditions, we would be broke. It would be a complete failure for the year, which is not an option. This is how we make a living. This supports our family.
Is your primary market the farmers market in Sonora?
Yes, the Sonora market is our biggest source of income. Oh, Samson, you finally saw Alan was here.
Hi, big fellow. Hi, buddy.
You've been chasing ground squirrels.
Yeah. Oh, you sweet dog. Did you get a ground squirrel? You part of the pest control? The biological?
He is.
Here or biological? You want to sit here? You can sit here.
So, yeah, the Sonora Farmers Market is our main source of income. We also do CSA boxes, usually in the spring and in the fall, and that's just growing food right here. We like to say that we grow food for our zip code. So we supply a few restaurants with some specialty products. The Nature's Whole Food Depot and Standard have been supporting us wonderfully since we started.
The farmers market on Saturday morning is quite an effort, from what I understand. Give me an idea of what Friday is like in preparing for the Saturday morning farmers market. What time do you get up in the morning, and what do you have to do?
It pretty much takes the entire day Friday, from first light until well after dark, loading the truck, harvesting the food, processing the food, and in processing, I mostly mean cleaning it, packing it into boxes to be able to haul to market, making sure that we have change for cash box, making sure we have signs that tell people what things are, and it's a little of everything. It's really nice. We usually have a few volunteers that come out and help us do that. People really enjoy helping prepare for the market, seeing it come from the field and, you know, the next day knowing that it's going to be on a table and making money. It's really a neat thing.
What is your most profitable product? Or does that vary from year to year?
It varies year to year and season to season. Now, I don't really want to give away.
About basil?
Basil, as far as square footage goes, a really profitable crop. You can grow a lot of basil in a relatively small square footage, and you can continually harvest it for up to 3 or 4 months if you stay on it and harvest every 2 or 3 days.
People buy basil, I think, because of the aroma as much as they do for actual use. I know we do. We love the smell of it, and we always buy more than we can possibly use.
People do. People love to pair them with tomatoes. That's a really nice combination with garlic. Lots of people make pestos and really stock up and do a lot of processing with the basil during the summer. So we encourage recipes as well to try to get people to buy even more and what they can do to stock up. It sure is nice to open a frozen jar of pesto in mid-February and still have that aroma and get that sense of summer freshness.
What's the most unique thing that you grow? The most unusual thing that you grow?
Well, I think that varies year to year. Over the last 10 years here in Sonora, we've grown about 40 different varieties of eggplant. And some of them people don't quite recognize as eggplant, not your standard black bell eggplant that you find in the grocery stores or your long Chinese plants that you would find in the stores, but little speckled green ones or polka-dotted ones. So often people think those are some of the most unique of the crops that we grow. But we've grown about 150 different varieties of tomatoes over the last 10 years, and some of those are pretty unique as well, and we're always experimenting with chilies. There's hundreds of varieties of chilies.
If I came out here on Friday morning, you could probably easily put me to work.
Oh, yes. Sometimes people are really gung-ho on volunteering, and sometimes the best volunteer work is weeding or digging holes or cleaning the chicken coop or washing buckets. So there's always something that needs to be done. As far as harvest goes, people often think of farming as a low-skill or a no-skill job. But to actually get a fruit or a vegetable from the field to the market takes quite a bit of skill. It takes a lot of care. You need to know how to harvest it, that you're not scratching, you're not bruising. Just slight mishandling of almost all the fruits and vegetables result in non-saleable products. So usually the first time someone comes out to volunteer, we start at a low-skilled job because farming actually is a pretty high-skilled position.
So when I come out on Friday, you're going to put me to work in the chicken coop. You know, I may avoid coming out here on Fridays, Larry. I'll probably see you Saturday morning.
You'll see my best crops on Saturday morning. We talk about farming and what actually we're growing on a sustainable farm. And what we're looking at here is a small family farm. And we have two young children, Avery and Una, 8 and 5, who are by far are the best crops that we're growing. What it's meant to the farm as they're growing up is we're focusing more time on them right now and less time on expanding crops or expanding fields. We're still maintaining and growing, but we're trying to spend as much time with our children and show them how to harvest peppers and how to eat carrots and care for the animals. So at some point, they will be a little older and actually help with growing, and we may ramp up production again in the future. But for now, that's definitely our best crop that we're growing. So you'll definitely see them at the market. They absolutely love the market, and you'll see Avery making change, and Una will be asking if you want sweet onions with that kale and really working the selling aspect of it.
I'm sure that's the best crop that you've got here. Just keep watering them. They'll grow.
Yep.
It's really nice to talk with you, Larry. I appreciate your time. I'm going to let you get back to it. You've probably got bugs to pick off of some plant out here. So thanks for talking with me this morning, Larry. It's good to talk to you.
Thank you.